Did you order? Okay, good afternoon. We're at 12 noon. So let's do a roll call for the legislative committee.
Roll call, Director Bilodeau, Director Tran.
Here.
Director Yeo. Director Whitaker.
Here.
Director Sheldon. Director Mezqua. Director Meeks. Director Nguyen. Director Rowe.
Here.
Director Green.
Here.
You do have a quorum.
Get to the very bottom.
Very good. All right. Are there any items received to look to the agenda? There are none. Any visitor would like to speak on Zoom? We have any members?
We do. The director, Doug Ryan.
Nothing to say, Doug.
Director on this part.
They to speak or
no? I see no hands raised.
No hands raised. Forgot it. Okay, we have a set item out here. I entertain a motion.
I can't mail.
I would move approval. I'll second by cool county.
I think you're still
up at the bottom, next to the bottom.
Yes, you are.
All right, I'll second the motion.
There you go.
Okay, we have a motion by Director Whitaker and second by Director Tran.
Roll call, Director Tran.
Aye.
Director Yeo.
Yes.
Director Whitaker.
Aye.
Director Mezqua.
Yes.
Director Rowe.
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you so much. Item two on the calendar, state legislative updates. We have Mr. Gonzalez.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chair and directors. Jason Gonzalez. Pleasure to be with you this afternoon. I will start with one general update. Last Friday was the deadline for the legislature to get bills out of the House of Origin. So all the assembly bills had to move out of the assembly and the Senate bills moved out of the Senate. The real vetting and testing takes place because there's not as much of a natural deference to colleagues in the other house. So with that, there's three bills that we are recommending a support position. The first one is AB 246 and it's co-sponsored by the California Association of Sanitation Agencies. And it seeks, beginning January 1st, 2025, to prohibit the manufacturing and distribution of female hygiene products containing PFAS. And the thought is it would limit those products, obviously, getting into wastewater systems and further PFAS contamination. The bill has no opposition. Again, it's co-sponsored by the California Association of Sanitation Agencies, and the recommendation is support on that one. Moving on with the consistent theme, AB 727, also co-sponsored by California Association of Sanitation Agencies, recommended support, and that would implement fines for manufacturing and distribution of cleaning products containing PFAS. And the first violation is proposed at a $5,000 fine, and then it graduates upwards from there not to exceed $10,000. It is opposed by the American Chemistry Council, manufacturers of cleaning products and kind of a coalition of such, but again, raises an awareness to PFAS and the recommendation is support on that one. And moving on, and don't mean to be going too quickly, but the last bill, also a support recommendation, is AB 1423, and that seeks to prohibit public agencies on or after January 1st, 2024, from installing artificial turf that contains PFAS. And it has no opposition, also supported, well, has a large host of environmental groups in support. And again, all three bills are in the Senate moving forward and the recommendation is support. So happy to answer any questions on those three bills. Otherwise, the next item for me to cover is the bonds, and I'm happy to move to that, whichever is your pleasure, Mr. Chair.
Are there any questions, comments?
I have a question for you, Jason. On AB 727, you said the American Chemical Association or the California Chemical Association opposed this bill?
The American Chemistry Council, yes.
Chemistry, okay. What were their reasons?
I don't think they like they don't like the fine structure proposed in the bill. I think it's just further regulation of the products their members sell. So it was more of an insular position, I'll call it, or insidious position, but they don't like the fine structure of $5,000 moving onwards up to $10,000.
Was there any amendments or proposal to amend the bill as far as the fine structure?
Not that I'm aware of that they've proposed amendments. But I would imagine as it moves through the second house, they may come to the table given the bill's continuing to move.
My comment would be that I winced a little bit at the level of the penalty for each instance. But otherwise, it's pretty easy to support the bill. But I understand where they're coming from a little bit out of the gate to have that.
Well, and I should note, I may have mischaracterized, the penalties for the first violation, they're not to exceed penalties. So $5,000 is the ceiling, and then the subsequent violation, $10,000 is the ceiling. So there's nothing that precludes the first penalty from being $500 or $1,000. So I should have clarified that.
Okay, that might be helpful if they have a lighter hand, at least in the burden.
Okay, do we need a position on this?
If we need a vote.
Okay.
Yes.
I
would move support.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion to support and second. Mr. Rowe, please call for the vote.
Roll call, Director Tran.
Yes.
Director Yeo.
Yes.
Director Whitaker.
Aye.
Director Mesqua.
Yes.
Director Rowe.
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
Thank you. Next up on the bond.
On the bonds, there are three proposed bond bills. The conversations are very fluid, I guess pun intended. The first bill is AB 1567 by Assemblymember Eduardo Garcia. He's been active on environmental and bond issues in the past, kind of a leader within the assembly on the issue. He's proposing just shy of $16 billion bond. The other bill is by Senator Allen, SB 867. It also proposes about a $15.5 billion bond. And then the third one, SB 638 by Senator Eggman. I would note she has a co-author, Senator Nilo, who is a Republican newly elected to the Senate, but had previously served 6 years in the assembly. He is a co-author on that bond measure, and that's a $6 billion bond proposal. The three bonds, the conversations and the details of those bonds are still yet to be worked out. We're even hearing rumblings that the bonds could be tied to a potential or leveraged by the administration to the infrastructure package that Don and Jason will be covering. So again, the negotiations are underway. The thought is whether or not this presents an opportunity, and I think it could present a very real opportunity if the board was willing to get behind some form of a bond proposal for potential PFAS funding or other board priorities. So there's potentially between $6 and $15 billion of wildfire mitigation, safe drinking water, you know, various priorities. And if directed, we may have an opportunity to at least get, again, potential PFAS funding. The conversations we've had with your executive staff have centered around the possibility of, if there's going to be PFAS funding, make it available for projects implemented or that started after the adoption of the regulation, so that, you know, Orange County Water District isn't precluded from participating, from receiving those funds because you were proactive and did the responsible thing. So there's three bond measures and potential funding opportunities if directed to pursue those.
Yeah. I just want to note that I worked with Aqua and CMUA on their infrastructure work groups. And so with Aqua and CMUA, the request for funding for PFAS cleanup and also for projects that would include the Sunset Gap seawater nutrition project. So there, those organizations are already advocating.
Good.
Yeah.
So can you tell us the calendar as to these three bonds and their likelihoods of passage or failure?
Absolutely. I think the simplest way of looking at it is between now and September 14th, because that's September 14th is adjournment of the first year of session. I would note between July 14th and August 14th, they're on summer recess. Doesn't mean negotiations won't take place during that period of time, but members will be gone. So we're looking at beginning next week, about 8 weeks left of session. Which, as you know, Mr. Chair, a lot of things happen in about 72 hours in Sacramento.
At the polling show, it's pretty good.
Do you think, Kathy, that the polling is good for bonds?
I couldn't believe it in the upward to the amounts.
Yeah, well, you're
I'm surprised.
It's stated here that they may be combined sometime in the future. And here, yeah, all of these are over, you know, big amounts. It could be like a $20 billion bond or more.
I think it was $16 million that was the...
Right, but they combine the others, it could be 20. Or,
but I'm saying the polling shows, you know, and some of these are kind of repetitious. I don't think it seems like
a dollar. As long as they get some funds in there for us.
Are there any comments or questions?
A lot could depend on the trajectory of the economy.
True. Mr. Schiller, I have a couple of questions. Are we being asked to do these? Are just
informational.
Based upon what I've heard so far, I'm inclined to oppose all three of them. You know, you've heard, I need to really hear on specificity of carve-outs and protections for water supply. We don't have another, you know, Prop 1 problem again, and how that flows.
Jason, are you recommending, ask this, these three bonds move along the halls of Sacramento, then you're going to come back and ask for a position?
Well, I think the question is whether or not Mr. Chair and the other board members would like to direct ourselves, myself, Don, and Jason to work with your delegation as well as the authors to pursue potential funding within the bonds for the agency. Now, if we're opposing the bonds, it obviously becomes very difficult, if not impossible, to ask for funding. Typically if we get funding in the bond, they being the authors will ask for support. So the question is there funding you would like, such as PFAS projects? And the second question is, would you be willing to support if we're able to secure such funding in the bond measures?
Well, since I was asking the question, Mr. Chair, I was only expressing my personal opinion.
Yeah.
And I'm one of 10, so certainly that's my personal opinion based upon the track record of the past bonds. I think we need some analysis from our staff as to what how they work and what the funding mechanisms are and what the pockets of money are and how weighted they are on environmental issues versus water issues. And I mean, there's a lot of more information just to get to understand. And I know it's just saying this, I'm not saying that it should have been here today. I'm just saying that we would need a lot more information. And, our PFAS, you know, by the time it's passed, the tranche is allocated.
Well, they did say what they would advocate for, Director Shelvin, with PFAS is retroactivity, so that we could seek funding for projects that have already been built. But you're absolutely right. I mean, right now, it is fluid. There's three bonds. They'll probably be consolidated. We don't know what the final bond will look like. So until that point, we really won't be able to do that analysis, but certainly we will do that analysis and bring it forward to the committee.
Moving targets.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Should I recommend or suggest that you work with our senior staff and flesh out some of the potential projects that we may be eligible for, see whether it's even worth it to take a position on the spot.
And we're not asking for a position today.
No.
Right. So, but I certainly, yeah.
No, these bonds are, you know, generally bonds in Sacramento. It gets to a point which is very controversial, given the debt ratio that we have here in the state, in California. And everybody has a special project, their pet projects, and they want to issue a bond up there. So you see a lot of that happening. It seems to be the trend. And then fiscal conservatives like us, I think we're, you know, our first instinct is, oh,
there's nothing stopping any local agency from issuing their own debt structured on a project.
Mr. Chair, can I add a little additional perspective to Jason's comments?
Yes, Mr. Gilbert.
Thank you very much. So here's where we think this is. As Jason said, there were 3-4 bonds that have been floating around. But when the governor introduced his May revise, his updated budget proposal a month ago, he endorsed what he refers to as a climate bond. Other people call it a resources bond, whatever you want to call it. It is a bond to fund things that would include PFAS cleanup potentially. So I think there's going to be a bond, because the governor has now endorsed it, because he's going to take about $1 billion of what he was going to put in his budget and put it in a bond as a way to help him balance his budget. So it's probably going to happen. So the legislature, basically, they're negotiating now with the governor on what it's going to look like. And it's not going to be the 3 bonds out there added up to $20 billion. That's just the starting point. It's going to probably be less than that. It's going. And it's probably going to get on the ballot, would be my guess. So the question is, and I totally respect the fiscal conservative principles, very much so. The question is, if this is going, do we want a piece of it? That's the question. And maybe not, but the best, it is an opportunity to potentially work with the communities you serve to lobby. We'd have potentially a lot of support in the legislature between all those communities and OCWD, and to potentially get money for both retroactive PFAS cleanup and prospective PFAS cleanup. So I think that's basically the issue.
It's a big chunk right there. All right, we hear you.
Summed it up perfectly. That's exactly why we always end up going with the bonds. But
that's what I learned back in 98. That SAPA got together all of the agencies and said, let's talk to our legislators, have them propose our earmarks be included in the Prop 13 initiative. And if they didn't include our earmarks, then don't vote for it. And that showed we were pretty successful and that we were good watershed managers. I think we should take the opportunity now from that lesson to talk to our legislators and Hannah and say, please include this in here. Don't vote for it. That sort of message to be kind of like, we've got an opportunity here and we've been screwed on other initiatives that came along that didn't include the initiatives that we were interested in. And yet we're stuck with these bonds. I hate bonds myself. We ought to pay as we go.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the update. If you could keep us abreast of what's going on.
Mr. Chair,
Yes.
Yeah, if I could just respond to Don Gilbert, I concur with your political thought that the governor's measure will likely get through. That's probably going to happen, and it should be interesting to look at it. It doesn't, our views are similar and the same, but I do agree, and we want to hear more about it. So thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Okay, thank you so much. Is there anything else with the state level?
Don has a report to give.
Yeah, thank you. I know we've taken a lot of time, so I'll try to be efficient here. So wanted to give you an update on the 3 bills out there that would very much negatively impact water rights holders and therefore water supply, including yourselves. There's one Senate bill, SB 389, and there's two assembly bills, AB 460 and AB 1337. And those bills, now that we came to the juncture, Jason talked about kind of the halfway point, at least process-wise, those bills moved out of their houses. The Senate bill moved out of the Senate, the assembly bills moved out of the assembly. However, and we've been opposing these bills for you, and most of the water world is opposed to these bills. With regard to SB 389, when it got to the Senate floor, and keep in mind, you know, that's the first house, it's a Senate bill, everyone's friends with each other, they don't like to vote against each other's bills. That bill got 16 votes, it needed 21. And the biggest problem with that bill is it would make it easier for a water right holder to be compelled to forfeit some or all of the water right, which is obviously a very dangerous thing. So the author was not able to get votes for the bill in the first round, and that's because of all the lobbying by us and by many, many other parties. So in order to get his bill off the floor, he got the votes he needed. He got the 21, he actually got the 23. By agreeing to drop the provision of the forfeiture provision of his bill. So there's still provisions left in the bill that are problematic, but by far the biggest problem with the bill is going to be amended out of the bill now, because that's a commitment he made to his Senate Democrat colleagues. So we feel very good about that. And there's a good chance, I would say about an 85-90% chance that there'll be a deal basically on that bill that's between the water opposition and the senator, and that could happen pretty soon. So that bill now goes to the Assembly Policy Committee. The other two bills, AB 460 and AB 1337, they also had votes on their floor, on the Assembly floor. AB 460 and 1337, both complex bills. Bottom line is they empower the water board to make it much easier for them to take water from water rights holders. Unacceptable. The first bill, AB 460, got 41 votes. That's exactly what it needed. It's an 80-member House, as you know, and 20 Democrats. There's 62 Democrats. So, you know, 20 Democrats, 21, were not with the author. That's even though we didn't defeat the bill on the floor, very much limping into a less friendly forum. So we feel good about that. The second bill, AB 1337, got 44 votes. Same thing, 41 is better from our perspective, but 44 is not an overwhelming endorsement, to say the least. So we feel good about where those two bills are going and our chances to either defeat them or force in amendments. No guarantees at all, but at the halfway point in terms of process, you know, we feel like the coalition that you're part of that's lobbying against these bills has been very successful to date. Happy to answer any questions. Oh, actually, I want to just add really quickly, your key representatives in Sacramento were very great on these bills. Senator Newman and Senator Umberg did not vote for 389 when it was on the floor for the first round of voting. They were involved in compelling the author to remove the forfeiture provision from the bill. And so they eventually switched as part of that agreement to votes in favor of the bill, but not until that commitment was made. On the assembly side, your three key legislators, Petrie Norris, Quirk Silva, and Valencia, all were non-votes on both bills. That's counted as a no. So your delegation performed very well on behalf of the district.
Yes.
I just want to let you know that we post our bill positions on our website right away as soon as we take them. And then we let all of the district, our Orange County delegation, know what our positions are. And so they have been, like Don said, very responsive to our positions on legislation.
Is there a star among the group?
Star, I don't know.
Thank you so much, God. There's no other issues or questions to be made. But
we think we have one more.
One more.
The budget trailer bills. Don was going to cover that. The governor's infrastructure package.
Yeah, I'll jump in there really quick on that. Good afternoon, everyone. And going to try and make it quick because we've already talked to you on state issues for 25 minutes. But no doubt you've all read or watched in the news that right after the governor put out his May revise to the budget, he called for a package to streamline certain permitting, in particular some judicial review under CEQA for infrastructure projects broadly. Parts of that package would, you know, specifically expedite review of CEQA challenges on water projects in the Bay Delta, canals, infrastructure, and recycled water projects as well. Would additionally kind of do some modest streamlining of preparation of administrative records in a CEQA challenge. The bottom line, I think, being, as we understand it from your staff, I keep using the word modest and streamlining. I don't think you could call this true CEQA reform, but to the extent that OCWD was ever in litigation, it could potentially have a more expedited pathway to get back out of that litigation with this infrastructure language. Jason sort of alluded to this earlier, but you know, it was not well received by the legislature. There were immediate, you know, kind of calls for this to not happen by the June 15th budget. And so the governor is getting some pushback there. He has lined up a lot of labor support on his side of the ledger. The environmental NGOs are predictably opposed to all of it. So, you know, it's always hard to vote against the governor getting bet against the governor getting what he wants in the budget. But it seems like he's got kind of a tough road in front of him if he wants to land this one. So we will see, and happy to answer any questions you have.
Oh, I was just going to say, AQUA had proposed a bill to streamline, and then the governor came out and said, you know, you need to withdraw the bill, and pretty much, and so we're kind of watching to see what's going to happen.
So AQUA had a state legislative work group on these bills and took a support position on most of them. There was one that they said, let's keep looking at, but on the judicial streamlining, administrative records streamlining, and fully protected species reclassification, they took support positions. The governor's staff did call us and ask if we would take support positions on the budget trailer bills, so if that's something that you want to do, I do have draft letters that I have not done anything with, but it is something. Those three topics are things that could aid Orange County's water district that staff have reviewed. It would be a narrow support into support of those provisions.
Like to see the letters.
It's the same as what's in the write up on page 3, the judicial streamlining, administrative reference streamlining. I'm sorry.
It's page.
What section?
You know where it's on the state section, so section 2, the bottom of page 3.
Our whole 18 on the internet, happy. It's 3 of 3 at the bottom.
The budget trailer bills, is that the are the numbers? Is it the first three bullet points? Is that what
you're trying to do? Yeah, they don't have numbers, so it's just basically the titles or judicial streamlining.
I reviewed these and I'm generally in favor of them.
So President Green signed off.
Right. I'm just giving my personal opinion on.
I didn't find anything objectionable. I found some things are positive. And if we could bleed over to other things revolving the CEQA, that would be good.
And staff probably would now analyze all of the different items. And a lot of them were very specific to specific organizations like Caltrans. So those really didn't affect us. So we just tried to identify the ones that potentially could affect OCWD. And those are the three bullet points that we listed.
Okay. But I think part of the problem is we kind of have the analysis of what it does kind of for us, but we don't know what it, other things it does. That was, I'm sorry. So it may do things that you don't think is as objectionable, but if we don't analyze it and read it, it may, or it's unknown to us, or this is just one part of the bill, right? There's other things, the bill does other things.
Well, it's not all together, they're separate. And so these are separate ones, but the ones that we don't think deal with Orange County Water District or that we may not be interested in, we didn't include them here. And Aqua also kind of focused on the water ones, but the right. ones that they thought may be objectionable, they just said, let's just watch and review later.
Right? I guess what I'm saying is, like this, and I'm generally okay with this, okay? But for fully protected species reclassification, it mentions one species, and then there's other ones in here that I don't know about. And I don't, once I know the totality of what we're endorsing, it's hard for me to do it, but I generally think these are good. So maybe we can, if you'd like to get the approval, maybe we can look at it some more, get some information and kind of move it to the board. But I personally need more detail as to, I may like one part of it, but I may hate the other part. I don't know what it is because we've just gotten a write-up on this. And I know that this is one part of a bigger part, but this part has subsets. Am I correct? Are there subsets in here?
Sam will review that.
Okay. Now I need to really read the bill.
So,
okay. So,
I'm not really written that way.
It's a bullet point, and there's probably maybe four sentences.
Can I get everything that you have?
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you. If I can just get everything you have, that would just start.
It was, yeah, I sent
it. We'll email that out right after.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, your staff saying they'd like to get this. We'd like to get a recommendation to the board for the board's deliberation the next meeting. Is there a timing issue on that?
No. The governor's office wanted this right away. And when I talked to their consultants, Jason Gonzalez said, I don't understand why they're in any kind of rush. So
it's okay. Pushback.
Yeah, because
we're getting pushback from the trades.
From the
environmental community. Well, I'm not the trade.
Mostly the environment.
That's a different issue. That's on the private sector.
Okay, so why don't we'll bring this to the board. Yeah, we'll bring it to the board.
I mean, I'm great on the first two. The third one, I just had some questions. I'm good on the first two.
All right, let's bring everything to the board for further consideration.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, not to further complicate things, but as Jason Eichard mentioned, this package was sidelined by both houses initially. The governor ramped up a lot of labor support and other interest groups. But now we're hearing as early as this morning, the governor is likely to leverage the bond package and this as one, which could put the environmental organizations in a tough spot. So to Alicia's point, this is all being negotiated, but we're likely to see it be tethered to a potential environmental bond.
Okay, nothing changes.
I misspoke on the trades. I was wrong. That's another nuance, not this nuance.
That's transportation.
Well, thank you so much, gentlemen. Are there any issues, questions that we may move on to item three, federal legislative update.
Chair, we have Eric Saperstein provide an update.
Thank you, Alicia, and thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Good to be here. I've got three substantive issues, or four substantive issues to talk about, and then I just want to spend a few seconds at the end about a DC visit by the district. The first issue, which we go through fairly quickly, is appropriations. The debt agreement that was agreed to about a week or so ago put in place the building blocks for the Congress to move forward on the fiscal year 24 spending bills. What that means is that the district's community project request is alive and well. Just for catching up with the past, Representative Kim and Senator Padilla each asked for $8 million to support OCWD's PFAS cleanup needs. So those requests are alive and well because the agreement was reached on how to put together appropriations bills in the coming several months. under the agreement, the debt agreement, the way it's going to work is the Congress has until October 1, except for this year, they have till January 1st, to put together the 12 spending bills and send them to the president. If they don't put the bills to all 12 bills together and pass them by that date, it triggers an automatic continuing resolution for the year with a 1% across the board budget cut. That's important because if we go down that route, if they can't get the deal done this year by January 1, because they gave an extension because of the late start on the appropriations, what will happen is that they can't do earmarks, essentially, because that's just the way continuing resolutions work. Our sense is that there are only two elements that would stop final bills from passage. The first, you saw the maybe read or saw the sort of the thrills and spills in the last couple of days in the House of Representatives, where members of the Freedom Caucus who are upset with the debt agreement that was reached, that the Speaker reached with the President, they pulled down a number of bills that should have been easily passed by not voting for them. The net result, although that may seem sort of foolish to pull down bills that you support, the net result of that action is to show that what they really would like to do, the members that are upset on the spending levels, is to force the House to pass spending bills that have bigger cuts than were agreed to in the debt agreement. The Speaker has already said, as a result of what's happened this past week, that he's willing to entertain reduced spending levels. So the challenge for putting together final spending bills is that in the House, at least, it looks like we're on a path towards more stringent cuts in the domestic and the defense side of the budget. The other challenges on the Senate side is that the senators like Lindsey Graham have expressed concern, and it actually has been a bipartisan expression of concern, that defense numbers for under the debt agreement for spending in FY24 and beyond are too low, and they would like to have what we call an emergency supplemental added to the FY24 spending bill. The Speaker has already said that that is a no-go, that they can't support it in the House, increase spending for defense. So we have these two issues working towards maybe causing gridlock the next couple of months. But at the end of the day, you got to believe that they will pass final spending bills because there are too many programs that would be at risk with increased spending cuts that are important both on defense and domestic side. And most important, from a sort of self-interest standpoint, 85% of the members of the House have asked for community project directed funding assistance. So there's every incentive in the House, and then the same sort of number applies in the Senate with respect to members asking for earmarks, that there's every incentive for folks to pass final bills and send them to the president. So right now, at least, we're optimistic. Well, let's say we're guardedly optimistic that we'll get final bills. And from a schedule standpoint, the House chair of the Committee on Appropriations, Kay Granger from Texas, said earlier this week that she hopes to get every bill off the House floor to the Senate by the end of July before they go out for August recess, which means that the Senate will follow suit sometime in September and October on funding debates on the floor of the Senate. So again, the schedule, at least right now, comports with the deadlines of the debt agreement. So we're in as good a position as we can be. If I could turn to PFAS, a couple of very important updates. First of all, we've been working very closely with the committee on the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works with respect to liability exemption language for water agencies as well as other public agencies. The committee staff have informed us that they're getting very close to releasing a proposed bill, not a bill, but a proposed bill in the next couple of weeks. When that happens, here's what's going to happen. Senator Capito from West Virginia, the ranking Republican on the committee, and Tom Carper, the chairman from Delaware of the committee, are going to issue a press statement. And that press statement is going to say that Capito and Carper have come up with a bipartisan approach to dealing with PFAS. Following that announcement, or at the same time, a select group of stakeholders, including yourselves, will be given copies of the proposal, and comments will be requested on what you think of the proposal. It will essentially cover research development and technology demonstration programs and funding. It will not talk about exemption from liability, but that's a calculated decision on the committee's part to be able to say they've got this approach. The NGO committee will not be able to criticize the bill. When they go to markup, however, they will then take an amendment to provide exemptions from liability for public agencies. And to that point, this should call it the stalking horse or the starting point. Senator Cynthia Lummis and seven of her colleagues on the Environment Committee on the Republican side introduced S-1430, which is a liability exemption for public water agencies and wastewater agencies from CERCLA liability. And that is the starting point for the committee to try and figure out what they want to do for liability exemption. I would say that the drumbeat for a liability exemption gets stronger each day. We provided Gina and Alicia with an article that we worked to get into Bloomberg Law on why an exemption is required. I think, Gina, you mentioned to me that that will be given to the board members because it happened after the deadline to get you folks information for this meeting. But it's a very good article, and it's a powerful article and written by a couple of trade associations. So it will be something that the committee will have and be able to look to as a reason why there should be an exemption provided in any PFAS legislation later this fall. That's where we are on PFAS and liability exemption. Again, I just would say that we're in a very good position. The language that we developed ages and ages ago is from a stakeholder position, it continues to form the basis of discussions outside of the Lummis bill. And then again, just the administration side of things, EPA had a listening session with the National Trade Association for Water and Wastewater earlier this past week. In that meeting, they talked about the fact that they are putting together enforcement guidance where officials will be directed not to pursue municipalities with respect to any settlement agreements with potentially responsible parties. That it's only going to be guidance. It probably isn't worth the paper it's written on in final analysis because it doesn't touch third-party litigation, but at least the agency understands and acknowledges that they put themselves in a real box when it comes to designating PFAS chemicals under Superfund or CERCLA. So that's where we are at EPA when it comes to liability issues. That guidance, by the way, should be out in some kind of draft form in the next couple of weeks. And you'll have a chance to comment on it if you wish. Let me turn now quickly to Representative Katie Porter's legislation that Alicia wanted me just to talk about briefly, H.R. 3027. It's called the Climate Change and Water Program Act. It is essentially a reauthorization of provisions that were included way back when in the Omnibus Public Lands Act of 2009. I had advised Alicia when she asked me what the situation is with this bill. It's a simple extension of a program at the Department of the Interior that gives the Department of the Interior and the Bureau of Reclamation specifically the authority to go out and look at water basins to figure out what the impacts of climate change are and if, in fact, there's anything that should be done on a collaborative basis with other federal agencies. The bill reauthorizes provisions that allows for Interior and the Bureau of Reclamation to work with non-federal partners to address issues such as storage and hydrologic models and sort of modification of reservoir storage and operating guidelines and what have you. But by and large, this is simply a renewal of an existing program that doesn't really impact the OCWD's day-to-day operations. It doesn't hurt them, but there is no money attached to this bill. It's just a simple authorization to give the Interior Department the authority to continue doing studies and develop strategies on how to deal with climate change impacts to water management and water availability. So that's the Porter bill. And it will be getting a hearing next week before the Committee on Natural Resources. And after that, we'll see what happens. But it will be a while before the bill is actually considered by the House of Representatives, if it's considered at all. And then finally, a DC visit. The question was raised to me that when would be an appropriate time to come back to Washington? Now the debt limit is done, now that the budget process is moving forward in the next couple of weeks, given the fact that June is almost over, my recommendation, if the district would like to come back to DC, and I think there's a reason for the district to come back to DC, talk about the Refuge Act and its impacts, talk about the funding request, talk about PFAS. July timeframe would strike me as the best time to be back in the district, back in DC, because you have the August recess, and then come September, you know, a lot of decisions will have already been made in July that will affect the final months of the first session of Congress in September, October, November. So, Chair, I'm going to stop there and answer any questions.
Thank you so much.
I just wanted to comment that Congresswoman Quarterstaff reached out to us and asked for a support position on her bill. This bill does not aid Orange County Water District in any way. So we just recommend a staff position. I just want to let you know that if you want a support position, it's up to the committee what you want to do, but we don't see how this bill helps or hurts Orange County Water District. And then secondly, Todd Petrie Norris's staff reached out and said that they are inviting Senator Padilla to visit and tour the GDRS. We don't have a date right now, but their office is reaching out to him, and then also a large group of the Orange County delegation to also invite them to come and have a large legislative tour of GDRS. So that's something that we don't have a date yet, but we'll keep you appraised.
Yeah, Padilla needs to come here. The staff has been here, but he needs to get here.
He seems good with the idea.
Yeah, but
it's just his schedule is.
Yeah, I know, but he needs to be here to see the eyeball views. I have some questions. The federal budget agreement, there was a push to have more defense spending. Is there an explanation of why they want more defense spending?
Yeah, there's a feeling amongst a number of members, Lindsey in the Senate, Lindsey Graham, Joe Manchin, to name two members who are really the leaders of the concern. They just think that the 3% increase that's involved in the current budget request is inadequate. And so they're looking for just a higher spending level. And because the budget agreement is binding, the only way they in Congress can get around that budget cap is to pursue what we call an emergency supplemental, and that is outside of any budget agreement. So that's what that's all about. Does that get to your question?
I suppose, yeah. I just reason for more defense spending. Like, yeah. They're afraid of Russia that's launching World War III. Yeah. I'm glad that you had the sense that there's a stronger opinion to have the exemptions for liability with PFAS, and that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, this is a little bit of slapping your collective backs, or our collective backs, but everything that's going on now is what OCWD started months and months ago, and the language that continues to be discussed is consistent with the language that you folks have seen before and blessed. At the end of the day, at least in the Senate, we have an understanding that if PFAS legislation is going to happen, it's going to have to address the passive receiver issue. So that's really encouraging news.
I just have a comment back to you, Eric, as well, and maybe Gina. In this article, there's one real sentence, I think, because the cost of this inevitable litigation will hit cash-strapped local governments and the organizations that provide essential services to their communities, including drinking and raw water systems, wastewater systems, solid waste landfills, and composting facilities, none of which manufacture or use PFAS, but then addressing secondhand contamination. It really crystallizes down to that one sentence. Very good article.
You have a hand.
Yeah. it was a joint effort that with, we worked with a group called the Passive Receivers Group, and it really was a collective effort, and it really, it is, that, like you say, it's a powerful statement, but it's cogent and it gets right to the point. And it will be, the committee staff have already said this is a wonderful article. It really helps us with our members.
Director.
Valerie, can I interject really quick? I apologize.
Sure.
The volume was really low today from where you're in, so I could barely hear, but I can hear enough to vote. I have to check out now, so does that change the quorum if I leave? I have a meeting to step into. Great. We're good?
Good.
Okay, perfect. Thank you guys very much.
So, Mr. Chair, if the committee wishes, we have on the agenda an action on the Porter Bill of Watch. Again, that's subject to the approval of the committee.
I don't see why we couldn't support it if it doesn't hurt or harm us.
Anyway,
it's some credit with Congressman Porter that we supported it. We need support for her.
But she never gives us support.
Yeah, I know.
So why do we feel like we need to?
I would just do a watch. I wouldn't get involved.
Oh, don't get involved.
But just bigger than us and doesn't involve us, and I'm sure, see what kind of reception it gets in the subcommittee or the natural resources. Maybe just take a little look.
Yeah. I would say if she had been supportive of even trying to be, I would certainly say, you know.
She has some odd notions about how water works here, too.
She did, but it hurts us.
Right.
And I think, you know, sometimes it's better to.
It's a standoff as to who extends the olive branch.
Right.
And we've extended three or four olive branches.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
It's her turn.
No,
balls is her court.
Yeah. Try. I mean, I don't usually get petty like that. So, but.
Okay. All right. So we stay on watch and no action taken. You would seek the committee's approval to take a watch.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. I would do that.
I'll second it.
We need a vote call. Vote on that.
Call Director Tran.
Yes.
Director Yeo.
Yes.
Director Whitaker.
Aye.
Director Sheldon.
Yes.
Director Rowe.
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
Chair, if I have a question for our air establishing our lobbyist.
Okay.
And if a staff would like to help me with this, but there is a definition in the Environmental Protection Act or agency pertaining to water districts, water systems that generally relates only to those that serve water, and it may not include like the Orange County Water District as a wholesaler. And we might be interested in having a little amendment to that definition to include ourselves. And so I just want to run that by you, and maybe if it's the committee's pleasure, we can work with you some more on that. And I'd like to put it out there if that's possible.
I agree with that.
Okay.
So Director Sheldon, you're a perfect straight man. How's that? We have put language into the legislative document that's being developed right now or being discussed right now that effectively references wholesale water agencies and political subdivisions providing water as eligible or to be exempted from Superfund liability. Your point is well taken. It's in the legislative language that we're not negotiating, but putting together with other stakeholders right now. And in fact, the reason I said what I said about being a perfect straight man, we had a conversation about 2 hours ago with a number of the folks that we're working with, and they raised the issue. Why do we have to reference these wholesale water agencies and political subdivisions if we have community water systems already identified? And I walked them through the fact that there may be opportunities and chances where EPA or somebody else would say you're not covered if you don't actually directly provide water to the public. So I think, and I will get this language to Gina and Alicia for distribution to look at. It should be to put together in a week or so as far as a collective effort again. and you guys can see it. And if you have a problem, we'll fix it.
Sounds great. Glad to appreciate your effort. Yeah. This is a different nuance.
Yeah.
And we'll follow up with you some more. I think it's the committee's pleasure to reach out to you on this.
Sure.
It's important. Thanks for the
thank you.
Working on good it. Job.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you. It's a very small.
I
was just being silly.
Something
to make fun of me now that I don't know.
Okay, on to informational items.
Four.
Children's Water Education Festival already.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. This is a long planning effort that takes us a year. So we have Crystal Nettles here to provide a quick update. I just wanted to remind the committee that last time we talked about festival, staff was kind of charged with exploring different venues throughout the county, just due to pricing and then also, you know, being able to accommodate the best date for optimal attendance. So Crystal will kind of give an update on where we're at, but I did want to take the opportunity to introduce Danny Birch, who is now part of the public affairs team, and she will be leading the Children's Water Education Festival from this point on.
Welcome, Danny.
Good morning, everyone. As Gina mentioned, it is a long planning effort. I think we just gave an update on last year's event, which took place in March of this year. So we were already looking to explore 2024. The event has been held at UC Irvine since 2014, and it's a wonderful location, but it does have its challenges, one of which being we are limited to when we can host the event as being part of UCI's spring break. And costs have significantly gone up over the years. So we've begun looking at several additional locations. We have reached out to UCI, however, just to see what they have available and the costs. But we are also looking into Cal State Fullerton, Concordia University, Miles Square Park, Orange Coast College, the OC Fairgrounds, the Orange County Great Park, as well as Soquel University. Over the next month, we've already started exploring some, but we will be exploring all of them. The date will really vary depending on the venue's availability, but it could be anywhere from March or April. But as Gina mentioned, we are trying to look at dates in which we can accommodate the most students, because inevitably a district or two has been on spring break when we are at UC Irvine. So we're trying to find that location that can accommodate as many, if not all, districts in Orange County. And at the next CommLeg meeting, we will bring forth a recommendation for a location.
I like the fact that CSUF is being considered. I think that would be very amenable to it. But I also think a more central location could work, like Orange County Fairgrounds. I don't know if there are cost issues with that.
Sure, maybe.
Is it the cost? And if so, why would the venues be not expensive? The timing, or what's the result? What is it more precisely?
It's a little bit of everything. So location just been able to accommodate the event. So we are limited on that to make sure that the location can have room for all of the cars, all of the buses. UCI, they have not had it yet, but there is the potential for construction down the road that could impact some of our parking. Costs rise every year. Some of these other venues would be less expensive, like Miles Square Park. They have their standard fees through the county, things like that. But then it really varies. It's a little bit of everything, as well as the availability. They could have already have events booked, or they have their own spring breaks.
Freeway close is very important too, right?
But you have to pay for parking at Miles Square, correct?
Correct, as a regional park, yes. And that is something that we have always paid for, so that's something that we're looking into to ensure that we could host the parking for any participants that would put on that.
Well, what is the budget usually? Like when we do one at UC Irvine?
Yeah. The approved budget for this past year was $245,000 for the festival. And so for this next time around,
it's 3 days.
It is, it is. And that's accommodating, you know, 5,000 students and 1,000, you know, teachers. And so that's the largest event that we have. So the budget amount for this next year is $265,000, but do note that we offset it with sponsorships. So we raised close to $70,000 to offset that cost. So,
CSUF for many years hosted the Donate Life, you know, organ donation. And we draw crowds of 12,000, 14,000 there sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all well accommodated.
Well, let's see if you can understand.
So far, where have you looked and what were the prices on?
I don't have the prices off the top of my head. Thus far, we have toured the Great Park at Miles Square Park and the Fairgrounds.
Okay. And what was their pricing like?
I don't have it off the top of my head.
Well,
I meant Miles Square. I'm not sure if Danny recalls off the top of her head. It was less than UCI, I can tell you that.
Okay. What about the fairgrounds?
The fairgrounds was less as well. They're very much itemized in what you get. The one challenge we found with that is Imaginology is taking place the week prior, and their tear down process takes some of the space. So plenty of space for our event, but where we can host it.
What was the cost
of UCI? It was around 60,000 or so.
Was there it included
parking, the use of all of the facilities, including the classrooms, technologies, coffee, labor, receiving the grass because we tear it up a bit.
Oh, that was really torn up this year.
Yeah,
well, the rain.
Yeah, that was.
Okay, so with Miles Square Park, actually, that's within the first supervisorial district.
Mm-hmm.
I have a little say in that.
I think that's a good location myself.
Centrally located. So in terms of cost, I can talk to it.
Is the parking expensive? Is there like a person working the parking structure? What makes it expensive? Are they just charging for space or?
For UCI? Yes. Yeah, they charge for space.
Is there like parking attendants that then regulate all that?
So this year was a little bit different where for the buses, we rented out the entire lot. So we rented every space. But for the individual cars, they registered their license plate ahead of time so that UCI could track and they charged us that way.
And for the first time ever, we did get UCI to sponsor. So they brought in $5,000. Maybe they tried to discount where possible, but it's just still a higher cost.
What is the parking cost per car?
It's around $12 or $15 per vehicle.
That's their policy. Basically, that's a day pass. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's $2 an hour.
So the options we're looking at will all be less than UCI.
Yeah, so if you can list all the options for us.
Okay. Oh, I remember when we started at UCI. It was fabulous. Because of so many speakers. The speakers were unbelievable. I think we had Alexandria Cousteau, we had National Geographic.
Yeah.
Really big names that had brought a swag. Had this, I mean, it was really something. Of course, a lot of that's cut back, but it's still fabulous. And now it's more interactive. I think at that time it wasn't as interactive. This now it's more interactive. So I'm sure the kids really get up.
I see some that has been changing in the location throughout the time.
Yes,
and I agree. Be useful.
Okay. No more questions, issues. Let's move on to number nine. It's public affairs.
Great. Thank you, Chair. I'll go through this quickly. So you do have in your packet a public affairs outreach report, which demonstrates that you continue to have a robust tour and speakers bureau program, as well as media outreach. So I just wanted to highlight a few items in the report. One is our awards. So in May, OCWD was recognized with these awards, and we did have various directors in attendance. So both ASCE awards and then AQUA recognized the GWR's final expansion with the Innovation Award. May, we did have a webinar featuring Jason as well as Prem, the director of our lab, and then a speaker from OC SAM talking about managing increased sampling in the lab and then regulatory requirements. That was well attended. I got nearly 190 attendees and then 110 on demand. So we do continue to host every other month. We host these webinars and they've continued to be quite successful. So we will continue to do that to highlight district programs and projects as well as staff. In terms of media, we do continue to get pretty significant media outreach, and a lot of it is trickling over from the April GWS event and all the great news of the final expansion. So here are some of the updates here. And then just wanted to call out a few of the articles. We did have our staff and the GWS highlighted in Trade Magazine, Municipal Sewer and Water. Mayhole, we have the PBS thing that came out last month regarding the GWRS, and that was one of five programs featured. The producer just reached out and said, you know, that segment has a million plus views. We also tacked on an educational opportunity to that, so that's continued to do quite well. And then Jason was featured on Spectrum One regarding OCWD's leadership in addressing PFAS and taking them through the slide. Our social media posts, we continue to have close to 16,000 followers on all of our platforms. Here's a sampling of some of our top posts. And I want to mention upcoming events. So on June 14th is OCWD's celebration of its 90th anniversary. And as such, we will host a celebratory reception right before the June 21st board meeting. So at 4:30, we've invited our producers and the boards of water districts, and we will convene outside the boardroom and have a small reception to commemorate the occasion. August 16th, since the April event wasn't a staff event, we are going to host with OCSAN a joint employee celebration to commemorate the GWS final expansion. And then in October, we will have the Water Summit on October 13th. So we continue to meet with Director Sheldon as chair of that committee, as well as the other members to formulate the program. And then we'll be hosting the Groundwater Adventure Tour. So that took a little bit of a hiatus due to COVID, but we're bringing it back October 27th. Did want to mention that with the 90th anniversary, we're also taking the opportunity to do a social media campaign. So if you follow us, you'll see different posts commemorating that. And then we also updated the history book, so we'll be able to get these printed versions out at the reception, and we're also going to post it electronically. So
I noticed Chair Tran commenting on the cover there.
Yeah, that's cool. That's
an idea. So we should have a pop quiz to see if anyone knows exactly what that is. It's actually Burris Pit Pump Station.
That's his first job.
Burris Pit Pump Station. So it's just along Ball Road. And that's looking north, obviously, towards the San Gabriel.
That's a great photo.
And it's Mike's first job at OCWD. Mine was the one that we tore down. We demolished it and built this one. So that's good, you're not worried about it.
It's almost as good as postcards.
Yeah, one of our retail staff members took this photo.
Catching that snow coming up.
Yeah.
Such a low level, also.
Yeah, it's a great photo. And then we'll also have a informal staff lunch to commemorate the 90 year celebration. So that concludes my presentation, unless there's any questions.
This is interesting. The tours, Chobani and the Getty family.
Yes. And those were. They approached us for those.
So. Nice. And why did the Getty family want
to? I think that was part of, so there was a photographer from the Getty team within this past year, took tons of photos of the GWS and the project, and I think there was just interest from the complaint to the black.
Nice.
Okay.
Looks like outreach is very helpful.
Talking about the Water Festival with the Getty family. We can. Yeah, they haven't come yet.
I'm curious, you know, we're getting a lot of, and I'm being entrepreneurial here, which could be dangerous, but you know, we're getting all types of folks coming in to do tours and visiting our facilities. Different areas, different segments, and basically professional areas as well. And this is a generic question. Have we taken advantage, maybe leverage some of our guests who are coming in and seeing what we do and are amazed and very, very positively inclined to support us to maybe co-host or co-sponsor or do some of a lot of the outreaching activities that they're willing to basically financially pitch in or even provide some support and resources?
I was looking at Chobani. I wonder if they have a...
That's
kind of a one-off.
Okay. You know the concept. I mean,
absolutely.
Everybody who comes in here has, you know, certain assets. They're curious and they have their own standing in their own society or community. And I'm just curious whether we're leveraging them.
That is a good thought. Absolutely. What we typically do too with some of the definitely with festival, anytime we kind of coordinate with Kira, who manages the program, looking out for potential sponsorship opportunities or bringing them in to present summit. And then we do outreach to them as well by email, sending the sponsorship, letting them know we came to visit our facility and all of that. And then with social as well, we do try to expand the reach because typically we encourage them to post and we'll share what they post. So, but we could certainly explore further how to strengthen that.
I think we're always receiving some benefit from elevating reputation, especially when it comes to intaking and getting talented new employees as well.
They all get added to our mailing list, our email list. Yeah, you know, I tried to get him to charge a few years ago. I got shot down. So,
and I still would vote against that.
I was suggesting selling GWRS water, but we have a lot of regulatory.
Yeah, you can't.
we can't get something.
They're all set up. Yeah,
we can't.
Let's move on to. Are there any items on the agenda?
You're going to bring
the board meeting is like the first of June.
The positions of the committee took
on the state.
And we'll put those on consent if it's the.
But then we have chair. One where we're going to get the information and take, and take right. action at the board meeting, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
That was its direction staff.
Okay, director's announcement reports.
Yeah. Alicia is engaged.
Oh, right. I noticed the shining.
And some of us know him, so that's
congratulations. Okay. Anything else?
Can't top that.
General manager's your report. Nothing to report or call for adjournment.
Thank you very much. We stand. Thank you so much.
Thank you.